Now, please join me in someone who's more gangster than Ice Cube. Please join me in welcoming our wonderful guest, Wayne D. from Inglewood.
My name is Wayne Butler. I'm an alcoholic. Good to be here. Good to be sober. I love it. Hey. Thanks for the invite. Don called me up and invited me, but it was at the behest of Gil, so thank both of you. Let's give Don another hand. I believe you're 2 years sober, right? Almost. That's right. No fronts. Right? No fronts. Where I come from, no fronts. Everybody's fronts, but no fronts. It's really a distinct pleasure to be here. I had a wonderful drive up here this morning. I met Gil at the noon meet at the 1600 Club. I saw all the usual suspects. In some places we call them characters. And I was sitting there with Gil. I was looking around the room, and I was naming everybody from my noon meeting. They're all there. The Nutcrackers, some saner than others group. I was in the summer sticker section, my sponsor said. He would say to me, summertime in the dead of winter. And I finally asked him, why do you keep calling me summertime? He says, because summer sicker than you. He's a character. Welcome, newcomers. Ashley, is it? I didn't catch the other guy, so I wasn't interested. I was thinking about myself. I want to say you're the lifeblood of AA. You'll hear some places where they'll say you're the most important person here. That's not true. I am. That's why Bill called it the lifeblood. You are the lifeblood of AA. Don gave a great pitch for someone with 2 years of experience. And I like your attitude. And I think we're cut from the same cloth. I'm sorry to say that for you. My sobriety date is November 8th, 1977. I've had no booze, pills, powders, potions, or lotions that affect my emotions from the neck up. I do have a history of dating mindful mood-altering women, however. My sponsor threatened me with another program, so I don't need no more chips. I'm tasked with the responsibility tonight to share what I used to be like, what happened, and what I'm like today. And I'm going to piggyback off of Don's lead. I have discovered there's three phases of 12-step development, and I hope my talk tonight follows those three phases of 12-step development. And those three phases are desperation, restoration, and transformation. Those are the three phases. Steps 1, 2, and 3, the desperation phase. Folks, I would have never followed through on steps 1, 2, and 3 if my life didn't depend on it, if I wasn't absolutely desperate. And because I was desperate, my sponsor took advantage of that desperation. He did not try to hug me out of it, I'll tell you that right now. He capitalized on my desperation to get me to do things he knew I ordinarily would not do. And phase two, the restoration phase, I want to tell you what I've learned about that in brief. The restoration phase has a duality to it. One of my mentors, Chuck C., taught me about duality early in my sobriety. And one of the things he taught me on that duality is in steps 4 through 9, there's a duality to the restoration phase. The Big Book mentions one, the 12 and 12 mentions the other. That duality of being restored to sanity where alcohol is concerned. And I'm here to tell you I am absolutely convinced beyond a shadow of a doubt that I cannot drink alcohol in any form at all, in any amount, safely. I'm restored to sanity, but it's just for today. It's one day at a time, it's a daily, but I am restored to sanity when it comes to that idea because I am convinced to my soul, having tried to find ways to drink alcohol safely and failing every single time, I am absolutely convinced that I can't drink light beer, can't drink O'Doul's, non-alcoholic beer, because there's a script behind that. And I know that. And so the other duality of that is that the most impressive to me is step 4 through 9 will restore me to sanity where life is concerned. I get restored to full citizenship. And I want to tell you a story about that tonight, how a man like me and the scrape of hell that I was in was restored to sanity out there in the earth world too. So it's a duality, being restored to citizenship, as we understand it, and being restored to sanity where alcohol is concerned. And that transformation phase, steps 10, 11, and 12. It's interesting to note that I can't change me. If you tell me all I have to change is everything, I know that sounds quaint. The problem is I know I can't, and I know you can't. I can't change me. I'm God-made. I can't change me. And so I have to have a change agent. And I found out that that change agent is the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, divinely inspired, I believe. And because of, and you see, I'm comfortable up here. I love it when I'm asked to pitch in a element such as this, because I used to stand here and give a different talk, holding up this book. And I can sermon you till you're sleeping. I'll get you to go so deep in your walls I don't have to work for a year. And I'm not trying to be cute with that idea. And so I'm comfortable up here in this element. And you know why I'm here today, and I'm no longer here on a Sunday, is because you're my people. I would give a sermon and feel emptier than when I began. Those are good people. And I learned that I'm too good for the bad people and too bad for the good. I've got nowhere to go. And I've got to say something else. When I leave here tonight, irregardless of how my pitch might go, I'm going to feel better than when I came. And I'm going to have learned something. I already did when Dawn talked. I had no intention of opening my talk this way until Dawn gave her pitch. And I want to piggyback off of that with those three phases. Because I think it's important to know where we stand, don't you? And I know in order for me to live in steps 10, 11, and 12, it's required for me to complete steps 4 through 9. Otherwise, I'm not going to get to transform. I only get blinking lights of it. It won't be permanent. It'll only be temporary because I haven't done the work to make room in my spirit for the goodness that's going to come in steps 10, 11, and 12. And I'm glad I know that. Because that keeps me here. Happy birthday with the one, by the way. You ever notice how they always get the loudest applause when they turn one? That's because we're as surprised as you are. I love this stuff. And so I just wanted to share that with you about those three phases. There's a lot of threes in AA, the three legacies, recovery, unity, service. Lots of threes. There's a spiritual realm to the number three. I don't want to go up on that door. I'll go into a collar. You don't want that. I drank a lot. Loved to drink. Loved Budweiser. King of beers. Any other Budweiser drinkers? The rest of you, I don't know what to tell you. Budweiser made me so good looking I couldn't stand it. Before I found my best friend, you know, I want you newcomers to know something. There's another duality. Alcohol saved my life at the cost of my life. It saved my life at the cost of my life. When I took my first drink at 17 years old, I realized I needed one when I was 4. And I'm going to talk about that a little bit as I go along. But I want to become an alcoholic before I tell my story. Because if you hear my story before you know I'm an alcoholic, you might think I'm psychiatric. I've already looked at some of you guys, and I know some of you are going to relate. You ever see that Peanuts cartoon? Is it Linus that drags the blanket, got that dust cloud along? We also still call that neurosis. If you're new, we can see your neurosis, so there's no sense hiding. You know, it's so simple. Bill wrote 4 chapters devoted to step 1. 4 full chapters devoted to step 1, including the doctor's opinion, which tells a knucklehead like me it must be important to get a full knowledge of my condition. And then I read the book, and guess what Bill said? I need a full knowledge of my condition. He didn't say self-knowledge, a full knowledge of my condition. When I'm new, when I'm in my first few years of sobriety, I have no full knowledge of my condition. I have bits and pieces as I pick them up in meetings and by reading the big book and taking the steps. But what's the reason that Bill said we must have a full knowledge of our condition? Because he knew that most of us wouldn't be motivated to stay here over the long term if we're not convinced. If I don't have a full knowledge of my condition alcoholically. And so it is incumbent upon me to pay attention. Where are you going? Get back here, slacker. I shouldn't do that. He's coming back. Now, where was I? I got to start over. No, really, where was I? Huh? Thank you. I don't have a canned pitch because I didn't thank you. I'm glad you came back. It would have hurt me if you had kept going. I'd have had to call my sponsor. I'd have had to call my sponsor and everything. What was that saying again? And so he gave us four chapters to help us understand. And here's something that's incredible. The rest of the chapters codify that. It establishes the need for it, and it also establishes in the spirit. It goes from the head to the heart. And I didn't know none of this stuff. Why do I need to know this? We got all kinds of professional help out there. Lots of great doctors and scientists trying to figure this thing out. Bill said so. Science may one day accomplish this, but it hasn't done so yet. It's true in 2024 as it was in 1939. They might. I believe they never will. That's my opinion. But I'm not a doctor. But there's a reason why I think that way, and I'm going to get to that in just a minute. But first of all, I want to read for you newcomers what it is that makes me alcoholic. And I'm going to read it in the first person, if you don't mind. I always hate it when I see somebody like me with a big book, but I'm doing it anyway. If, when I honestly want to, do I find I cannot quit drinking entirely? That's a tough question. See, put it in question. How many of you have done the 20 questions John Hopkins said? Are you an alcoholic? If that helps you, God bless you. Personally, I think it's the dumbest test I've ever seen. And here's why. What was your name? What does that mean?
McLean.
McLean. McLean. Okay. I hate people with good names like that. Wayne is so mundane. My name. Twenty questions test. I'm gonna read a header. Anybody else? Like if I give it, somebody gives me a book as a gift, I read the ending. And if I don't like it, why bother with the book? So when they gave me that 20 questions test in the United States Navy, I went right to the bottom of the test. And wouldn't you know it, they put the quantification of this exam right there on the bottom of the page for everybody to cheat. You can cheat. Says if you answer yes to one, you might be alcoholic. Now, come on. I may be goofy, but I'm not stupid. Anybody's going to answer one. I mean, I haven't read them yet, but I'm sure of that. If you answer yes to two, you're probably alcoholic. If you answer yes to three or more, you are definitely alcoholic. So I already know I ain't giving them three. I don't care what's on the test. My question is, do I give them one or two? I don't want to think I'm lying. And then we find out we have a two-question test in the big book. Remember Johns Hopkins. If you identify with two, you're probably alcoholic. Okay. When I honestly want to, do I find I cannot quit drinking? Do you know how many times I wanted to quit drinking? I wanted to stay in the Navy. I love the Navy. I do well under structure and order, especially when I'm being given orders. I may not like to take it, but when I'm in a position I have to, I can do that. I love the esprit de corps. I had a chest full of medals when I got back from Vietnam. I planned to stay for a career. But the hitch is they wanted me to stop drinking. But I'm not an alcoholic, sir. He said, Petty Officer Butler, when the ship left Subic Bay, you weren't on it. Well, that's a small detail. And they made such a big deal out of that. And he said, either you go to treatment or we're going to send you home. And I said, I'll go home. Without a second hesitation, I said, I'm not an alcoholic. Why would I quit drinking? Now, deep down inside, I wanted to stay and I wanted to quit drinking, but I couldn't admit that. Because I knew I couldn't. Isn't that interesting? I somehow knew I couldn't quit drinking. And so if you know you can't, why want to? So my thesis began, I don't want to quit drinking. Screw you. My wife said, if you don't come home for dinner tonight, I'm leaving. Folks, I swear to God, I went upstairs and started packing her bags. I said, you may as well go now. Two kids in the bedroom, don't care. I had no idea that alcohol had such power over me that I would not care about my own kids. Isn't that something? That's power, isn't it? And then I read in How It Works where Bill wrote alcohol. He did not say disease. He didn't make me a victim of something we can't do nothing about. It said alcohol, cunning, baffling, powerful. You know what the baffling feature is in alcohol, in my opinion? The baffling feature for me was my utter inability to leave it alone. I know the efficacy of ethanol alcohol. I know the scientific basis of alcohol. And I'm going to share it with you if you don't mind. Alcohol is not addictive, period, by nature. I don't care what the money makers tell us. Alcohol is not addictive by nature. 9 out of 10 people can drink alcohol safely, and every one of you, I'll bet you know somebody like that. They're a pain in the ass. I have a sister. We go bowling when I go back home. I hate bowling with her. First of all, she's really good. The second of all, she's the older sister, so I got to kiss her butt. I go get her shoes. I go get her slow gin with orange on ice. I always ask her, why the ice? I don't understand. If you don't have ice, there's room for more liquor. And she looks at me like I grew a head. And then she doesn't drink it. It sits there while she talks to the neighbors bowling. I'm watching the drink that she's not drinking. And the ice is melting. Did you know, how many of you have noticed this? When the ice melts, the water goes and sits on top of the booze because it's lighter than booze. Drowning the alcohol. That's alcohol abuse. I pointed that out. I said, she's been an hour. She's taken a few sips. And she said, what's the matter with you? I said, you're ruining your drink. Look at it. She says, is it bothering me? I said, yeah. Don't look at it. Takes her an hour and a half to drink that one drink. Half hour later, she says the impossible. She says, will you go get me another one? No, I can't take it. But I acquiesce, and I go get her another drink. We are there a total of 3.5 hours, and she didn't even finish the second drink. It was half gone. She doesn't even hold it in her hand the whole time she's got it. So we're getting ready to leave, and I'm looking at that half-left drunk, and she's abandoning that drink right there. And she says, what's the matter? I said, are you going to drink that? She says, no, I've had enough. And I said, so have I. I can't take it. So I explained the ethanol thing that I'm going to explain to you right now. Did you know that creation designed human beings to be able to metabolize 1 ounce of alcohol per hour? All human beings. And if you had the necessary enzymes for the metabolization process to take place, you would be able to drink 1 ounce of alcohol per hour safely and never get drunk. And so I explained that to her. I said, Sharon, we have been here 3.5 hours. You've had 1.5 ounces of alcohol. You can't be drunk. You can't be feeling nothing. She said, yes, I can. I said, so what are you feeling? She says, I'm feeling like I might lose control. I said, that's when you have another. And that's when I learned the difference between me and them. This is the difference. They're afraid they're going to lose control. You give me 3 or 4 Budweisers and I feel like I'm gaining control. That's the difference between me and them. It's an unusual effect. And because that phenomenon of craving takes place, that allergy we talk about, that phenomenon of craving, that once I have a few drinks, a craving develops in my mind subconsciously. Why else would I sacrifice my own children, 2 wives, the Navy, countless dastardly things that I did out there? Why would I do that unless alcohol owned me? And it's not alcohol's fault. It's just the way it is. I'm an alcoholic. But see, stopping drinking should fix that. Dr. Silkworth even says so. He implies it in his opinion. When he gets done telling us the description of the alcoholic, and the normal drinkers, and the 2 types and the 5 groups, he goes on to say, the only relief we, the men and women of science and medicine, the only relief we have to suggest is entire abstinence. That's it. That's all they have to suggest. Entire abstinence. Don't drink. I don't know about you, but when I don't drink, and I don't have a solution, I get worse, mentally and emotionally. How many of us have experienced that? You stay too long without a solution, and the wiring goes bad. That's me. Not only am I alcoholic, but then I found out I have this condition called alcoholism. Here's the sad thing. Or if when drinking, do I have a little control of the amount I take? How many of us have experienced that? Once I take a drink, I cannot predict. I got married in a blackout. I had no idea who that woman was sitting in my car with me. Now, I'm a Christian back in those days. I'm not going to break any more of the Ten Commandments I already have. But I happened to have been drinking for a few days, and I looked to my right in my car, and here's a strange woman I've never seen before in my life. And she's wearing a wedding ring. And I thought, oh my God, I've done it now. I've committed adultery. And she puts her hand on my forearm, and she says, quote, "What's the matter, sweetie?" "Sweetie, that ain't my name. Who are you?" So I said, "Who are you?" She says, don't do that." I said, "Really? Who are you?" And she hit me. You don't like to be asked who you are on your honeymoon. We had gone to Palmyra, Missouri in a blackout and got married. I volunteered to go back to Vietnam. I swear to God, I spent 28 days with her, and I said, "Captain, send me back. I'm safer over there." He said, "I don't know what to do." Okay, never mind. So the baffling feature of alcohol is my utter inability to leave it alone, knowing it's not addictive. So I can stay away from it for weeks at a time, but I always go back to it. Something compels me. Father Dowling called that in the 12 and 12 a spiritual compulsion. And that's when I learned about alcoholism. Being an alcoholic is those two things. When I honestly want to, I can't quit entirely. Or if when drinking, I have a little before you want to take, you are probably alcoholic. And I went like this. That was close. Probably. Nowhere in this book does Bill say, "We are alcoholic." He says he is. This is the only condition unknown to science that requires a self-diagnosis to be effective. And that's why we tell stories here. That's why I want you to talk about your drinking. I don't relate to drugs and all the other stuff. You'll lose me if you keep talking about drugs, because I don't fit here then. We tell stories so the Me Too movement can take place. You know what I mean, don't you? When a speaker is speaking, and in the back of my mind, I'm going, "Me too. I drank like that. I felt like that." And it requires that for an alcoholic to go, "Me too. I need to hear the drinking stories." And so I share drinking stories. Only enough to get their attention, newcomer. If you have problems with drugs too, there's three organizations that deal specifically with drugs. That doesn't mean you're not welcome here. That just means they deal with that. They need to hear your experience over there so that you can help those drug addicts try and get help. That's where you need to hear it. I can tell you other stories too, but I'm not going to bore you with them, because I want you to identify. I want you to thank me too when I'm sharing. Not everybody. I don't know. But I now know what alcoholism is. You know what Dr. Silkworth said? He said some type of moral psychology is needed. But because it's beyond the realm of science, they can't tell us. And that's where Bob and Bill and the Great Spirit came in and brought those two characters together. Can you imagine two more different characters in the world? A bankrupt stock speculator and a broken down drunken proctologist. He works on the south end of the pole, if you know what I mean. Could you imagine needing surgery and his hand is trembling and you know where he's cutting? The Creator brought those two together so that we would have all the door open to every human being that comes through the door, whether you're like a Dr. Bob or you're like a Bill W. I'm a lot like the Bill W. guy, neurotic as you can be, sometimes psychotic. But alcohol fixes that in me. I tell you, I love to drink. I swear to God I do. It made me, I need a freedom from bondage. And it's like, you put a few drinks in me and I'm brave. I go from zero to hero in my mind. Anybody else? Anybody else think they can fight when they're drunk? Especially the police? My mind was broken when I was a kid. You know, you'll hear some of us say about our traumatic childhood, and a lot of people don't have a traumatic childhood. They say that has nothing to do with alcoholism. It has nothing to do with being alcoholic, but it has everything to do with alcoholism. If you understand what the big book is talking about with the ism factor in alcoholism, what that ism represents, you might hear, I sponsor myself, IFM. I separate myself, those are clever. But the one that's in the book that saved my butt is an internal spiritual maladjustment. And somehow a few drinks seem to adjust me to my circumstances. It makes life tenable. This frightened little boy in a man's body that's scared of life itself, but you give him a few drinks, a few Budweisers, or when if you progress like I did, I also progressed into fine wine. Nothing you buy out here, by the way. Ripple. How many of you people over 45 remember Ripple? The reason I say over 45 is they shut that chemical plant down. Boone's Farm, Strawberry Hill. That makes me sweat. You know why I like Boone's Farm, Strawberry Hills? Because when I puke, it looks like I'm bleeding internally. And I tell the girls I have stomach cancer, I'm dying. Because I know about the sympathy thing. Problem is, I forget which bar I'm dying in. And I'm a projectile puker. I had partial dentures on the top and bottom. I remember one time I was so sick. I know we ate dinner earlier, but we had time to digest it. I was so sick. Oh, my God. And I went to the ivory altar. Some of you young folk, I don't know if you know, the ivory altar, of course, is the toilet. And I bowed before the ivory hour, letting everything fly. Both ends. I had terminal diarrhea. If you ever had terminal diarrhea, you got to have split-second decision-making skills. And you got to have good timing, which I had neither. So I'm bound there, and it's coming out every orifice, and I'm puking. My partial dentures blow out into the stool. And I realize that they get to the bottom before I get to the bottom. They're gone for good, and welfare ain't giving me no more. So I went in after them, and I caught them right before they went down the shooter, and I thought, what the hell? I rinsed them off and put them right back in. I sure miss drinking. Well, that makes me a tough guy, doesn't it? I learned about that ism thing here, folks. I learned about it in our history. That what I suffer from sober, that I suffered from before I ever took a drink. And here's what the symptoms for me are. They're in the 12 and 12. If you don't read the 12 and 12, you'll never see this. You see, the big book was the beginning. This book is the beginning and the end. But for us, the big book was just the beginning. In the first 20 years, we had two more books developed from our experience to help save the life of alcoholics. And it's the 12 steps and 12 traditions, and AA Comes of Age, our first history report of what it was like that we struggled for the first 20 years. I'm a recovered big book thumping one book wonder. I'm guilty of telling people all their answers are in the big book. I'm guilty of that. Not anymore. Bill wrote on page 164, we realize we know only a little. So how can all the answers be in there? God would constantly disclose more to you and to us, and he did through Bill and those pioneers when they put together the 12-step essays and the 12 traditions. And then Bill called the 12 and 12 the supplement, which means to make complete. Bill wrote he felt the 12-step essays completed the big book. So I personally use both of those books in my step work. Because all the directions are in the big book, but the codifying symptoms that Bill experienced in his mid-years of sobriety, where he almost left the very organization he helped start, is dedicated in that 12 and 12, those 12-step essays. If anybody's interested in that history, I'd be glad to share it with you later outside. I'm glad I found that out because it kept me here. It kept me off medication. And I ain't saying don't take medication, so don't leave here and say I did. Now for the part that makes you think I'm crazy. I've been psychiatrically institutionalized 17 times. I was in the Watertown Insane Asylum for the criminally insane 14 times. To be fair, I self-signed in 4 times because that's where my girlfriend lives. She murdered her family. She's a diagnosed sociopath. She was found unable to stand trial. She never did leave her. She died in that institution. And we were on the ward one day, and she walked over to me and she whispered, "I hear you're a psychopath." I said, "Well, that's the diagnosis." She said, "Well, I'm a sociopath. I think I like you." This was the days of One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. I liked it in there. Finally have a girlfriend. I told her my story and why I was in there. And we were going to be together forever. I know that sounds sick. I was medicated to the gills. I've been diagnosed 21 psychiatric diagnoses from the age of 9 to the age of 27. I was put on medication at the age of 9. Because, you see, they didn't understand alcoholism back then. They didn't understand the ism factor. They didn't understand the ramifications of a spiritual maladjustment. You see, I'm a spiritual being. So if I have a spiritual maladjustment, then I'm subject to chronic self-doubt, self-centered fear, fancy self-sufficiency, and failed self-reliance, complicated with and by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity, all elements of neurosis. Bill said half of us are going to suffer from that and the other half aren't. My brother's sober 44 years. He doesn't suffer from neurosis at all. Ever since he got sober, he's been fine. He's like Dr. Bob. I've always felt separate, different, alone. Anybody else? I've always looked around and never been enough. When I was 17 days sober, 18 days sober, 19 days sober, my sponsor took me to my first convention, which is one of the reasons I'm willing to do this for fun and for free. When Johnny talked on Sunday morning, he said this while during his talk. He said, "I've crawled around on my hands and knees in solitary confinement, hollering and barking at the moon, praying to God to get me out, and in the same breath praying to God to keep me there. Why? Because I realized I'm too good for the bad people and too bad for the good. I have nowhere to go." Clancy called that no friendly direction. And I had that fight. When he said that, a 19 day sober, he got my attention. Because that's exactly what I go through. No matter where I go, I'm too good for them or too bad for them. Even for the bad guys on the street, I'm not bad enough for them. So I hang out with good people at the church, and I know I don't fit there. They tell me I fit there, but I don't feel like I fit there. I'm thinking things I shouldn't be thinking underneath that crucifix in my church. I'm having thoughts about the preacher's wife I shouldn't be having, and I can't stop them. They call that compulsion and obsession. And I come into Alcoholics Anonymous obsessed with alcohol. But really, folks, it isn't alcohol I'm obsessed with. It isn't the psych meds I was taking that I'm obsessed with. It's the effect produced that I'm obsessed with. Because when I take a few drinks, it does something for me biochemically it's not indicated to do. I want to share this bit of science with you if you don't mind. Alcohol is designed to do one thing and one thing only. It's a central nervous system depressant. It's supposed to loosen up your inhibitions. It does, doesn't it? How many of us experienced that? Well, it ain't going supposed to go as far as we take it, though. I'll tell you that right now. It loosens up our inhibitions, and then we get relaxed. And then if we keep drinking, we'll pass out because we're being sedated. We don't black out. We'll pass out. That's what alcohol does to 9 out of 10 drinkers. But for every 1 out of 10, it does something biochemically opposed to that. While it's sedating my body, it stimulates my mind. Did it act like a stimulant for any of you? You give me a few drinks, I'll dance naked on a bar. And I can't even hardly look at myself in the mirror at home. I do things I would never think about doing sober. I'm too afraid to. You give me a few drinks, I can talk to a girl. When I was 17 years old, they took me to the senior dance. I was in the retarded class. I got diagnosed mentally and emotionally retarded in eighth grade. They gave me an IQ test. How many of you took the IQ test? Seriously, come on, how many? If you score 100, you're smart, don't you? You score 120, you're a borderline genius. You score 150 or above, there's an organization called Mensa that will literally find you and recruit you to go sit in rooms and think for people, and they'll pay you. As a side note, I've heard it said that we in Alcoholics Anonymous are above average intelligent people. Well, in 46 years, 7 months, and 28 days, Mensa has never been where I've been in AA. I'll tell you that right now. I scored 57. And I didn't cheat. And I got diagnosed mentally retarded. They called it mentally retarded then. It wasn't special ed yet. You see, they didn't understand alcoholism in the family. They didn't understand the ism because it hadn't been discovered yet. You're just a bad person. Evil. See, they didn't understand how alcoholism looks in a sober person. And so they filled me full of pills, diagnosed me psychiatrically. God bless them for trying to help me. Don't take it wrong. They can't help it that they can't study the only thing AA is designed to treat. Isn't that interesting? Come to find out AA is designed to treat one thing and one thing only, the result of the spiritual maladjustment. It truly is a spiritual malady, isn't it? Otherwise, AA wouldn't work. You see, AA can't work scientifically. Scientifically, this can't work. We don't psychoanalyze you. At least we don't get paid for it. You get marriage advice from people who've been divorced 4 times? You get credit advice from people who've been bankrupt 7 times? And the funny thing is, their advice works. That's the damnable part of it all. It just doesn't work for them. Because they don't follow their own advice. Just go around the group and start asking relationship advice. And then go see counseling if you have to. I didn't understand none of this when I got sober. I didn't understand. I just had to learn it. And you know, Bill uses the word learning many, many times in the big book in the 12 and 12. I had to learn what my real problem is. And my real problem was taught to me by a guy, a very revered AA member called Chuck Safe. When I was 18 days sober, my sponsor gave me his banquet ticket so I could sit at Chuck's table. I didn't know this. This is all what I found out later. So I'm sitting there. My teeth are missing. I've only got 4 real teeth left in my mouth, and they're strategically located. So I sit like, blah, 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 blah. So I'm sitting there next to Chuck. Elsa's sitting next to him. And Chuck takes out a napkin and a pen, and he gets my attention. He said, "Kid, look." He drew a line down the middle of the napkin. And he said, "What's that?" How many of you heard him talk? Then he got a funky laugh. And I said, "Well, it's a line." He goes, "No, that's just your perception." I said, "Well, it looks like a line." He says, "I'm sure it does." And then he draws a big circle on the right side of that line. He says, "What's that?" And I'm thinking, if that's not a line, I don't know what that is. But I took a chance and said, "Now it's a question. Is it a circle?" And he says, "No, that's just your perception." Now I'm getting angry. He's making a fool out of me. And then he draws a stick figure on the left side. And he said, "Who's that?" And I'm thinking, if you say me, I'm knocking you out of your chair, old man. He writes Chuck C on top of that stick figure. And he said, "What this line represents is conscious separation from my loving Father God. Circle represents all this good about God and life and love. And the little dots are God's little kids all over the world." And he said, "This is me. This is Chuck C, separated from the needed power to live. And that is my only problem in life, and that is the only problem I will ever have, and all my other problems stem from that one thing." And then he turned his attention to Elsa and ignored me. And I snatched that napkin up, I don't know why, I snatched it up, and I still have that napkin to this day. It had a powerful effect on me. I thought, I wonder if that's my only problem. Is that possible with all my problems? I got problems. They're getting ready to throw a net over me again. So in my last 10 minutes, I want to say this. I had no idea that this solution you spoke of would help me. I'm convinced psychiatrically that I need help. I'm convinced medically that I need their help. I'm convinced. And then I became unconvinced by taking the steps. by working with new people, sicker than me, some of them. And we sat there one day at a time, and I went through those three phases of 12-step development. I turned my will, my life, over to care of God as I understand Him, good orderly direction, G-O-D. I already had God, folks. I love God. I've never blamed God for anything in my life. I somehow understood free will. I don't know why, but I did. I understood free will. So I never blamed God for the horrible things that happened to me as a kid. At 9 years of age, being raped and tortured by a neighbor. They say that's got nothing to do with alcoholism. It's got everything to do with alcoholism. That compounded the broken spirit fracture that I came in here with. And if that doesn't get straightened out, my spirit won't heal. And that is, in fact, will give me. And if you're a Dr. Bob type, you won't relate with that. So I'm not talking to you. Except for, I hope you're aware of it, so if you do work with an alcoholic like me, you will understand that, and you will not dismiss the pain we're in. Because what you did is you had me take the 12 steps because victims don't get to stay sober. Because victims, we're living in the past so much that we have no future. And AA has a way. You know, my sponsor took a big book like this, and he set it up next to my head. And he said, what we're going to do is we're going to back this truck up to you, and we're going to load it up, and we're going to move you out of that victimhood you're in and find you a new neighborhood. And I didn't think that was funny at all. And he says, what we're going to do is we're going to help heal you. We're going to heal that broken spirit you've got. We're going to do it by way of the 12 steps. And he says, you don't even need to believe it. You just need to do it. And then he showed me in the third step in the big book where he doesn't say God is doing for us what we can't do for ourselves. He don't do that till later in the book. He says, faith. Faith is showing us, is doing for us what we cannot do for ourselves. Faith in my sponsor. Faith in my fellow alcoholics. Develop faith in my sponsor's story, in his recovery. I developed that faith here long before, because see, I already done God. I can't tell how many times I begged God to take this curse off of me. I didn't know I was spiritually intoxicated with spiritual make-believe like Bill wrote in the family afterward. I can't tell how many times I was down on that bar, not this one, but one just like it, praying in front of everybody, please remove this demon from me, and then I would go drink. I didn't understand the powerlessness that I had. You see, it had to come from you, God. It came from a sixth grade dropout machine operator, John Deere, named William Barney Barnett, who ministered to me with this book, this blue book. And then that other blue book, that lighter blue book. And then AA comes of age. And a picture came together for me. 5 minutes to sum up. You see, what I used to be like, when I got here, I was a wife beater, a child abuser, an animal abuser, a racist, a bigot, hater, sadistic, psychopath. That's what I used to be like. They say there's no fix for that. They told me I'd be on medication for the rest of my life. The court ordered me to take medication, or I couldn't leave the Watertown Insane Asylum on my 17th trip to the psych ward. But because of the sponsor who did H&I at that very institution, he went to the board of psychiatry, and he said, give him one more shot with me. I'll take him home. He can stay with me. I'll look after him. That's the only reason he let me go. That little old man was William Barney Barnett, my sponsor. And he put me on a path. And that's what's interesting about how it works. You know, Bill summed up the entire program in 3 pages that we read at almost every meeting. And I hope if you're new, you don't allow it to become white noise. It's not time to check your phone. It's not time to check in with your neighbors. How it works is the principal pledge of Alcoholics Anonymous, in my opinion. And I'm only going to cite 3 things now, because I don't have time to go into any more. Sentence 1, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Did you ever notice path isn't plural? There's about 100-150 journeys in this room right now. I don't know where your journey is going to take you, but I got a pretty good idea. But you'll have your own journey. as you other happy birthday to all the birthday people. We all have our own journey, don't we? But Alcoholics Anonymous is the only path that's been proven successful for 89 years in the history of man. Nothing else has lasted anything like this. The closest to it was a program called the Washingtonian Movement. Do you know in 5 years they had 100,000 members? We barely had 1,800 in 5 years. And then they had no singleness of purpose, so they thought this works so good for alcoholism, let's get into women's suffrage. Slavery. And within 5 years, that program was extinct because they had no singleness of purpose. So we learned from the failures of all these other organizations how to keep us together one with another. Isn't that beautiful? And we found it. So we have those 12 traditions to bind us so that we don't become what became of the Washingtonians, the Emanuel movement, so many other movements that tried to do something about our problem. And we finally found something that's been holding steady for 89 years. And I pray to God it lasts for another 89 years. I'm certain it will. Why wouldn't it? Because we're going to train our youth in AA. We're going to train in the AA way. You see, we get a lot of people, see that transformation phase, steps 10, 11, and 12. I've been transformed. And you know that racist thing that I came in here with? Do you know, when I was 3 months sober, this black fellow named Charles came up and asked me sponsoring. I pulled a gun out of my back belt, put it to his head, called him the N-word, and I said, get away from me, I'll put you in the ground. I got home that night, and my sponsor called me. He said, I heard you told Charles you wouldn't sponsor him. I said, Charles, I can't sponsor him, and I told you why in my fifth step. I can't have nothing to do with him. He said, here's the deal, dummy. Are you aware nobody in AA likes you? I said, quite. He said, are you aware if you don't have a sponsor, you've got no chance of staying sober? And I believed him. I said, I understand. He said, good. You're going to call Charles up. You're going to apologize to him. You're going to tell him you were wrong to use that word. And you're going to tell him you'll never use that word again as long as you breathe. And ask him to forgive you. And then if he does, then tell him you'll be glad to sponsor him if he still wants you to. Folks, if I would have thought he'd agree with it, I'd have never told him. There's no way he's going to want me to sponsor him after what I did. So I called Charles up, and I said, Charles, I told you exactly what Barney said, just like this. Charles, I was wrong to put that gun to your face. I was wrong to talk. You can tell I didn't mean a word of what I was saying. And, Charles, I'd like you to forgive me. I'm going, no. And he says, I do forgive you. He says, I'm really shocked that you can do this. And then he says, I'd be happy to have you sponsor me. And I thought, well, that didn't work. And then this 6-foot lesbian asked me to sponsor her. Told her no, get away from me, got a phone call. That happened 6 more times. Black, brown, red, yellow. Everything that I was taught to hate, I am now sponsoring. And I want you to know something. I would have never done that of my own volition, but because my sponsor said, I'll have nothing more to do with you if you don't. And you know what? There ain't a racist bone in my body. We're all God's kids. I know it's time. I see you getting vegetables over there. I love people. I got 1 minute. Relax. Damn newcomers off out here. Do you feel it? Do you feel the energy? Do you feel the hope? If you don't have faith in God, have faith in us. Have faith in this book. It's proven. Any meeting you go to, you see the miracles that are in here right now. We have people sober all the way up to 36 years, I think, or 32, from just a few days. You see, this works. It's proven. It's not a theory. This is proven. It goes beyond science. It goes to the spirit of man and woman. And I hope to God my spirit heals even more. That transformation process is no ending to it. I'm in the process of being transformed right now. And I can assure you that when I leave here tonight, I will not leave here the same man that walked in that door a couple hours ago. I hope you feel the same way. Thank you.
Do please give Wayne another round of applause.